You're listening to the MoneyWeb SAFM Market Update Podcast.
It's another personal finance segment on a Monday, and we continue looking at things that can hopefully assist you in better preparing in your personal financial journey. This week, we are taking a look at severe illness cover. If you remember, a couple of weeks ago, we had a look at terminal illness cover. This week, we're looking at something slightly different in the form of severe illness cover. I'm joined on the line by Craig Torr, who's a director at Crewe Invest, to take a look at this and see if we can make sense of it. Good evening, Craig. Thanks so much for taking the time. Let's understand what we mean by severe illness cover, and perhaps let's dip into a bit about how it differs from the terminal illness cover that we might have previously discussed.
Hi, Jimmy, and thank you for having me on the show. Yeah, severe illness could result in a terminal illness. Terminal illness meaning that the sort of end is in sight. So, you know, dread disease or a severe illness or a critical illness, it's known by a whole number of different names, is really pertaining to the diagnosis of a condition that may or may not be terminal. So, you know, upon diagnosis, whether it's a cancer, a stroke, a heart attack, and numerous others, the insured person would receive a lump sum payout of that benefit.
Craig, how do people prepare for that kind of situation? I mean, obviously, you can't really anticipate whether or not you're going to contract an illness or whether or not it'll be a severe illness. What's the best way to prepare from a policy perspective? And then I suppose from a lifestyle perspective around managing those kinds of covers. They're not the everyday cover that we think of.
Yeah, it's a very difficult one, Jimmy. And I think the hardest part is calculating or trying to prepare for how much cover you would need. Firstly, you have no idea which dread disease you're going to contract, if one at all. And secondly, you wouldn't have any idea of what it would cost you if you don't know what it's going to be. So typically, there are a couple of factors that we look at that will determine how much or how little dread disease to have. We'd look at what other cover the person has in place. So for example, if you have a medical aid and if you have gap cover, medical schemes have been obliged by the law to cover certain life-threatening conditions when hospitalized. So that picks up a lot of the risk that people were perhaps subjected to 20, 30 years ago, even when they had medical schemes. So, of course, if you've got a medical aid and gap cover, the chance of having shortfall in relating to a dread disease is quite minimized. Then the other factor to look at is, does the insured person have an income protection benefit in place? They could have that via their pension fund at work or in their personal capacity. And then the other benefit that kind of can tend to or seem to overlap is capital disability. So that's a lump sum that you'd receive from the insurer on being termed to be disabled. So, you know, sometimes these critical illnesses are sort of a temporary nature. And if you've got all of the other bases covered, the financial implication may not be as severe as one would expect. So it's quite a difficult one to calculate, but if you have all of the other covers in place, certainly the need for dread disease or severe illness cover can be reduced or minimized.
Craig, when we look at the severe illness cover versus something that you mentioned, the disability cover, are those fundamentally different? I mean, if I have one, do I need the other? Can I have both in place? How do you navigate that? Because you use the disability one as an example, and there are individuals out there with disability cover, but that might not necessarily be dread disease or severe illness cover.
Yes. So the two do tend to overlap, and it is quite confusing for your typical person on the street. But typically what would happen is the most appropriate, in our view, time to use capital disability is when a lump sum is needed, for example, to settle debt, a bond, or a post-retirement shortfall, you know, a capital disability amount could be used. So what actually happens there is that the disability is not potentially as a result of a dread disease, you know, so that's where the two possibly don't overlap, whereas the dread disease itself could result in a payout, and that dread disease could lead to a disability. So effectively, you could receive a payment for receive or for contracting a dread disease, and then a further payment for it leading to a disability. So there is a little bit of an overlap that one needs to be aware of. And that's why I said up front, you know, if you have the disability in place, the dread disease or the sum that you would insure yourself for in the event of a dread disease could possibly be a little less than if you didn't have the disability in place.
Craig, when we look at other policies, I mean, this is obviously a policy that people get over and above some of the other existing policies that they have. But if I've got a life policy, can I add something like this to the life policy, or does this need to be its own kind of little separate set of insurance policies that I put in place, perhaps with a separate provider, or is it something I can just bundle into the rest of my covers?
Yeah, Jimmy, typically that would be the you know, the most obvious route to go, just add it to your existing policy. It would result in underwriting, so you're not going to save yourself the underwriting, but it would keep your life a little simpler from an administrative point of view. Alternatively, you can have a standalone product, so either option is available. Typically, it would depend on underwriting and pricing.
Mm. Now, when we look at underwriting and pricing, obviously that'll determine the cost and the premium and those sorts of things. Craig, take me through the tax implications. If I happen to need to claim from this or there's a payout from this, is that subject to tax? Is that going to be payout in a lump sum? Is that something I'm going to receive as an annuity? Can I decide between how I want to have the amounts paid out?
Yeah, so Jimmy, there isn't a tax consequence. So typically you would receive the lump sum payout dependent on severity in a lot of the products. I think there are a couple of products where you can receive a monthly payout for a period of time, but generally it's seen as a lump sum payout. And the rationale behind that is it's there to defray medical expenses, possibly make some changes at home, to your car, for example, wheelchair purchases, those sorts of things. It's typically a lump sum payout there.
So what happens after the lump sum, Craig? Do I then not have a cover in place? Does the cover wear off at a certain time? If I've claimed, what then happens to the policy? Do I need to get a new policy?
So there's something called an accelerated benefit, which means that you could have multiple claims under the critical illness banner, and it would typically be for a new condition or a different condition. However, some of the products do allow multiple claims for the same condition should it become more severe. So, for example, as cancer moves from a stage 1 to stage 2, 3, 4, you could get a part payout at stage 1 and then receive a top-up payout at stage 2 and 3, for example.
Craig, before I let you go, I want to take a look at the T's and C's, so to speak, for policies like this. I mean, we touched on the fact that most types of illnesses are covered. Most types of diseases would be covered under this, and there are very specific diseases that are covered there. Are there specific exclusions that might prevent you from accessing this sort of cover, or while you have the cover, then prevent you from claiming under whatever exclusionary clauses that might come specifically with this type of cover?
Yeah. So I think, Jimmy, again, you've got your typical exclusions, suicide in the first couple of years, or attempted suicide being an exclusion if you injure yourself in a self-inflicted injury, or any illness relating to drug and alcohol abuse. So these are your typical exclusions. And then there are condition-specific exclusions. So when a person applies for the cover and they have a pre-existing condition, the insurer could well exclude any claim for that pre-existing condition because it's deemed to be too high a risk for the insurer. But then they would still have the cover for the other conditions that may crop up over time.
Now we know a little bit more about what severe illness cover might look like for those of you that are looking to have these conversations. Please reach out to financial advisors, have the conversations as part of your other financial decisions, and see which options and which cover is best for you. I think we'll leave it at that, Craig. Thank you so much for the time and for the insights. That's Craig Tor, Director at Crewe Invest, joining us to take a look at what it means to have severe illness cover in place and some of the considerations you should think about when you're looking at that sort of cover.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb SAFM Market Update podcast, uploaded weekdays at 7 p.m. For more MoneyWeb podcasts, go to moneyweb.co.za or the app and follow MoneyWeb News for daily updates.